Welcome to the Real Turf Techs Podcast, for the technician that wants to get real. Follow along as we talk to industry professionals and address hot topics that we all face. Along the way, we'll learn tips and tricks. I'm your host, Trent Manning. Let's have some fun. This episode of Real Turf Techs on Golf Course Industries Superintendent Radio Network is presented by Foley Company, a strong supporter of equipment technicians and golf course maintenance departments everywhere. Foley Company offers a proven solution for above and below the turf for turf professionals everywhere. To learn more about Foley Company's line of reel grinders, bed knife grinders, and the Air 2 G2 family of products, or to find a distributor, visit www.foleyco.com. Foley, ready for play. Welcome to the Real Turf Techs Podcast, episode 95. Today we're talking to Mitch Hunt, equipment manager at Traverse City Country Club in Traverse City, Michigan. Traverse City Country Club is a private 18-hole club. Mitch is the lone tech in his shop. He has mainly Toro equipment. Let's talk to Mitch. Welcome, Mitch, to the Real Turf Techs Podcast. How you doing today?
I'm excellent. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you for asking. Tell us how you got into the turf industry.
Well, I was retired, and one of my best friends brought an ad over to my house saying that Traverse City Country Club was hiring an equipment manager. And my response was, you know, I'm retired. Why would I want a job? And, you know, my buddy's like, just look it over and, yeah, you might be interested. So I kind of looked it over pretty good, and it was pretty appetizing. So, and also I read that the old equipment manager had been there 22 years, which.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I'm like, well, you know, there's something there if that guy stayed that long, you know? So, So I called the superintendent, Steve Hammond, and was in his office the next day, accepted the job, and started my new career.
The rest is history, as they say, right?
Yep. I really enjoy, you know, going to work every day, and it's definitely a dream place to work. You know, Steve has built such a great work environment over the last 25 years. It's just a pleasure being part of the team there.
Oh, that's awesome. So he's been there 25 years?
Yeah, 25 to 28 years. Yeah, I actually think it's 28, but.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. Great. It's really nice to work with a long tenured guy like that, you know, knows the business and knows the ropes, and especially if you're new to the industry, to help you along the way.
Yeah. And we have two team members, one that's been there 16 and 25.
Wow. That's awesome. Yeah. So that's really good. Yeah. And that says a lot, because obviously if they didn't like working for Steve, they would not be there.
That is correct.
Yeah. Do you relief grind?
Yeah, I definitely do. Yeah, and I've done it both ways. I think the first year I relieved, and then the second year I was kind of talked into not. But I believe grinding the relief on the, you know, trailing edge reduces the contact area between the reel and bed knife, you know, resulting in less friction. I seem to get more life out of it with the relief. I'm not touching up the bed knives or reels as much, not adjusting as much too.
That was going to be my follow-up question is, what did you prefer out of the two?
So I definitely like the relief, you know, less friction, longer life, actually better discharge out of the fairway mowers for sure. Okay, less load on the reels and the hydraulic system and the motor. It frees up some horsepower in my opinion. So
No, I agree completely.
You know, a lot of people are just, that is such a, it's one or the other with everybody. No one's kind of floating a line between. It is definitely a yes or no, you know, the relief or not. So,
yeah, no, I agree. There's a lot of people out there, and I mean, they have a good product, and or they can produce a good product with no relief. So you can't really bash it, in my opinion.
I would agree with that too.
I mean, I got my personal preference, but we all do. And we all know what they say about opinions, and we won't go there. What's your favorite tool?
my hoist and my power washer, my parts washer, which I just got the parts washer last year, and it's big enough to put a fully assembled fairway reel in. So it does, I can wash any part that I can actually put a reel in, just wash the reel to clean it up before I work on it. It gets hot enough. I've actually did the old heat the race up and then slip the bearing in. So in the old days, we used to heat the races up, be able to get the bearing in. Well, I could do that in the parts washer. I actually did it 2 weeks ago. So I was like, well, I didn't, the intent was to clean the part, put it together right away, but it slipped together perfect. It was because that race was heated up a little bit. So, and of course, our hoist, it's been there 25 years, and I think it was like fifth generation of that particular hoist. You know, every generation got better. And yeah, it lifts about 5 foot. It's a pedestal type hoist that goes into the ground and lifts up about 5 foot high. And it's got four removable panels, so I can park a mower in a certain location on the lift, take the panels out, get to every reel and be able to adjust every reel. So
if I remember correctly, aren't they several of those in your general area at different courses and stuff?
Yeah. And that's how, that's how we got the fifth generation, because, you know, one guy got it and then they improved on it. Then another guy got it and it was all local in Michigan. So like I said, okay, they, you know, they keep saying it's the fifth generation of it. So, and it's still very relevant now from, you know, 25 years ago.
It still awesome.
Does everything we need. So great design. Definitely a great design.
So let's back up on the parts washer. What inspired you to get a parts washer big enough to put a hole cutting unit in?
Well, it started off, I just wanted to get rid of our, you know, the manual parts washer that everyone has in their garage. You know, just the solution in a tank. Usually has a little pump with a little brush. My first year in the wintertime rebuilding stuff, it just seemed like 70% of my time was cleaning parts. You know, trying to clean them up, use contact spray afterwards or brake clean to get the part really clean after I wash it in the solution. But it was taking up so much of my time. You know, I came up with the idea that, hey, we need some kind of automated parts washer so I can just put the parts in there and go do something else. And then the next step was is that we looked at some and priced some, and I'm like, well, I want to be able to wash every part we have. So, you know, the biggest part we have is basically a fairway wheel with the rollers is the longest part. So I was just like, well, it needs to be big enough to set a fairway reel in. And Steve and I talked about it quite a bit, and it was like a 6 month, you know, deal before we purchased it. You know, we just wanted the right fit, you know, the right chemicals, you know, just, it's a basic biodegradable soap. So we really like that. It gets very hot and it's very high pressure in there. So you can basically wash just about any part in 5 minutes in there. So,
So do you disassemble the cutting unit before you put it in there?
No, I do not.
No. Okay.
I do a very quick, you know, like if I'm getting ready to grind all the reels, got them off, I'll pre-wash it real quick. And then once I disassemble it, if there's any parts that grease or anything that's got to remove, I will put those parts in the parts washer. I have baskets and hangers for the inside of it that work very well. So I'm able to clean everything just back to brand new.
Okay. So. No, that's awesome. Yeah, I was just kind of curious, especially like the smaller DPA cutting units. If you put one of those in there and they have the sealed bearings, you know, do you pull the seal out and clean those out and then re-grease them?
Well, like the fairway unit, I made a special plate to go on the side of it where the pump goes in. Okay. So I make that 100% sealed. I pre-grease everything. I re-grease all the fittings, put it in. Pull it out, and I actually will pop all those Zerks just to double check and make sure that no water's being pushed back out. It seems to work very well. So
awesome. No, yeah. That's so cool. Very, very cool.
You know, the like the grains mowers, I've had no issue with washing those and then taking them apart and seeing any rust in them, you know, letting them sit for a little bit before I take them apart. I haven't had any issues. I usually, you know, make sure everything's, after it comes out, you know, WD-40 or penetrating lube or something. Especially if it's like a spindle and I'm rebuilding a spindle, put it in to wash it. As soon as it comes out, I'll spray it down. Even though I'm not going to put it together right away, I'll spray it down so I don't get any of that surface rust.
Right.
So I try to keep up on all that. So issues so far.
That's awesome. That's great to hear.
Yeah.
And yeah, I could see more people going that route because it is a big pain in the behind to clean some of the stuff that we run across. What do you do to relax or find your balance?
Nowadays, you know, I've been fishing, fly fishing for steelhead and salmon, do an annual trip since 85.
Wow.
Usually go to Pier Marquette in Michigan and the Betsy River. Like I said, I started that, I think, when I was, senior in high school.
Okay.
Yeah. And enjoyed it so much. I have many friends over the years that I met that I always meet down at the river. And I have one fishing buddy that's been with me the whole time. So, you know, we like plan it for the annual trip. I also do fly tying. Love doing that. But the only downfall of that is that I seem to tie flies for everyone else other than me.
Yeah, that's the way that goes, right?
Yeah. And it's kind of it's a lost art. Not a lot of people tie flies anymore. I know I picked it up in my second year of fly fishing. And just, I love doing it. It's just something, you know, I can pull this stuff out anytime and tie flies and get ready for the season and make sure everyone else has enough flies too.
When does the season start?
Right around September. There's a run from September to sometimes it's into November. You get a big salmon run, kings, and then some steelhead will come in behind them. So, you know, we used to go down every weekend, but nowadays, you know, I just kind of make it a long weekend type thing. You know, we go every weekend, you know, the second they were in the river, but you know, just can't manage to do that anymore. So
I thought you were retiring, right? Yeah. It's hard to retire and work at a golf course full time because I know that can keep you busy.
The retirement got bored very quick after about 5 years. So I definitely everyone knew I needed something to do because, you know, I was a 24/7 worker before.
Well, I've seen in my life, I've seen a lot of people a lot of guys that retire and have nothing to do. And it seems like they don't last too long because, you know, I don't know, it doesn't keep your mind active or whatever. I don't know, sitting around watching Westerns all day or whatever you do when you don't have something else to entertain you.
Yeah, and what the hard part is that all your buddies are still working.
It ain't like you can go play.
Yeah, we used to go to Florida every year for 6-7 months, and you know, we'd winter down there and then come back here. Did enjoy that stuff, but you know, just a little young to retire. And I really enjoy what I'm doing too, so I have no regrets whatsoever.
No, that's awesome, and that's good. Yeah, no, we're glad to have you in the turf industry for sure. I really enjoyed meeting you and the time we got to spend at MTI in Michigan. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, we really had a good time. It.
What's one of the strangest things you've seen around the shop? And this doesn't just have to be a golf course. We can go back to motorsports days.
Well, definitely for work, one of our guys that pretty much is planted on a rough mower, Toro Sidewinder, and he's on that thing 7 days a week, and he's usually pretty good about catching stuff, you know, when something's wrong. And he does an incredible job mowing. He came in after lunch and said, "Hey, it's just not mowing quite right." And I said, "Well, we think we sharpened the blades last week." And I said, "Well, let's pull it up on the hoist and take a look." So I pull it up on the hoist, and embedded in the blade is the top of a sprinkler head. And it's still there.
Nice.
And for him to, you know, say it's not cutting right, I thought that was pretty incredible. I actually took a bunch of pictures of it because it's really hard to believe that that thing was still stuck in the reel and he was still out mowing with it.
So, that's crazy. Yeah, I don't know what these operators do sometimes, but it reminds me, I had a 3500 come in, and he pulled it over on the wash pad, and he comes in the shop and he's like, "This thing's not cutting at all." So I go, I'm 100 feet away from the mower, and I see a stick that's like 5 inches in diameter, a log, not a stick, hanging out of the deck. And I said, that might be your problem. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, it seems like the size, it's got to be a log before they get off the mower and pick it up. It seems like they'd rather just try to chew it through the reels and see if it'll eat it up.
Oh, yeah.
They'll get off the mower, pick it up sometimes. I had the same situation with another guy on a fairway mower. I went out and did my morning, you know, drive around to see how everything's cutting. And I kind of looked at his pattern about halfway through his pattern on the first fairway. He was leaving a line. And I stopped him. I said, hey, did you kind of notice you're leaving a, you know, a line, you know, about 2 inches deep, about the, you know, width of your thumb,
mm-hmm.
everywhere you're going. And it, same deal. He just picked up, just happened to pick up a stick that big, got caught between the bed knife and the reel and was sticking straight down. And it was just mm-hmm. gouging in there. He was a newer guy, just wasn't that aware of what was going on yet. Yeah. You know, no big deal. And they actually had to hit a big pair of pliers out and put it on the hoist to get that thing out too. It was jammed in there pretty good. So,
well, that's the other thing. Yeah. That how easy stuff gets jammed, but how hard it is to remove. You know, I mean, I don't remember what it was. It was a metal stake. So we're bent Bermuda grass green. So when it gets really cold, like below for us, I say really cold, you're going to laugh. Below 20 degrees, we cover the greens to prevent winter kill. And so it's basically a tent stake, if you will. It's a quarter inch rod and it's got a angle on top of it to hold the tarp down. And every spring we find these, and every one we find in the spring is with a reel. I don't know, it's Murphy's Law or whatever. But I had one hung up in a fairway mower and I couldn't get it out. I ended up having to take the cover off and, you know, bend it. I mean, it was incredible how it gets jammed in there.
Yeah,
just from mowing over it.
It can be anything. We get, they're like tumbleweeds from our fescues at the end of the season. And that stuff is like wire and it eats any seal that it gets into. And it's just part of the fall schedule. Just those, they're like, I call them tumbleweeds. They're not tumbleweeds, but they look like it.
Yeah.
Like they're just like wire. So
crazy. What's one of your pet peeves around the shop?
People that park in my way. It always seems like when I'm in a hurry, I got to get out on the course and check on something. Someone either grabs my cart, pulls their cart in front of it, or if I'm trying to get to a unit to work on it, I'll move 10 units and then go back in to grab something, come back out, and then all 10 units have been moved and I got to remove them to get the piece of equipment I want to get.
Yeah, that's so frustrating.
Yeah, that's one of the big ones. You know, one of the other ones is don't touch my tools.
Oh, yeah, that's very true.
I don't mind. Yeah, I don't mind if people use my tools. Hey, Mitch, can I use a screwdriver? Yeah, go ahead. That's fine. But as long as it's not, I'm not around or they grab it and don't say anything and just put it back. I'd rather have them grab it and tell me later, hey, I used your screwdriver, put it right back to where it was. I'm like, hey, I'm good with that, you know.
So, yeah.
And a dirty shop floor.
Yeah.
I like a very clean shop. Understand people will bring mud in. Don't have a problem with that. But when people are too lazy to bump their shoes off, before walking in, that kind of drives me nuts. Definitely like to keep a real clean shop and don't like a lot of outside dirt in there. So.
Why don't we have one of those floor scrub, or a foot scrubber, you know, clean your shoes off before you walk in the door. And it's at our main walk door. And we have a wash pad kind of at the back of the building with another walk door. And this guy the other day, his boots were caked with so much mud. So he fills our brush up with all this mud. And we also have an air hose there. And he blows all the mud off right in front of the walk door. So everybody that walks through is tracking it into the shop. And I'm just scratching my head. I'm like, we got a wash pad over here. You could wash your boots off and it would go down the drain and we wouldn't be tracking it in here. Just something that simple and easy, but sometimes we don't pay the employees to think.
Yeah, and you know what? Everyone comes in with dirty shoes. I don't mind that, but when it's excessive and they, you know, mud from one end of the building to the other, that kind of drives me nuts.
So. Mm-hmm. No, I get it for sure. And parking in the door, I can't stand it. I've even talked to my GM before, very politely, and asked him not to park in front of my bay door. And he was cool with it. He gets it. He understands. So, but I was a little nervous going to the GM and, you know, I wasn't going to run over there like I would somebody on the crew and say, don't park in front of my door. You know, please, sir, do you mind if I move your car? You know, I didn't even ask him to move to get it out in front of my door, but he was cool with it.
Oh, that's good.
That's
easy when it goes like that. It normally doesn't, you know, doesn't go that way. You normally it's when everyone comes in at lunch and everyone just parks wherever, you know. So, okay, man, I'm still working. You guys got to get this stuff out of here, you know?
I wish I could have got a video of it. I heard a story of a superintendent that he went to the clubhouse to eat lunch, and he had been on the crew for quite a while about don't block his cart in at lunchtime, because I guess they would just like pull into the shop and block his cart in. And they said he got on the cart and he just started ramming the other carts until he finally got it out of there. But I would have not liked to have been his mechanic and have to fix all that stuff. But, you know, sometimes people lose it.
Yeah, no matter how many times you say it, sometimes it just doesn't hit home.
Well, and I did hear after that incident, nobody parked behind him anymore. So maybe he got his way, hopefully. Do you have a mentor in the industry?
You know, I don't really have a mentor in the industry. I do have, you know, like Ben Beard, you know, you, Hector, you know, a bunch of guys that I can call and talk to and get some quality information from. And everyone's been really helpful, you know, only being around for a couple of years. You know, I'm definitely one of those guys that has to get to the root of the problem and has to know every detail. So.
Mm-hmm.
I've always looking for knowledge and always ask a lot of questions. So,
no, and I think that's a great way to be. And if I remember right, I think we had this conversation at MTI. So I don't want to put words in your mouth, but when you were in the power sports industry, did they share information?
Oh, no. And I guess I didn't really bring that up. I used to, you know, I was a Yamaha marine dealership owner for, you know, 20 years. So I was the man. And worked 24/7. And, but in that industry, everything was a secret. There was absolutely nothing that you shared with the dealers. And I had great relationships with a couple of the dealers that I did dealer trades with. But beyond that, you never told anyone how you make your extra money, your back end money, all that stuff. It was just a no-no. Yeah. And that's what I love about this industry is that everyone's an open book and you can turn in any direction and get help from anybody, whether it's the equipment manager or superintendent, an assistant, everyone has been great, polite, and it's answered any question I've ever asked, which I'm not used to that.
No, that's awesome. Yeah. No, welcome to the turf industry. And that's definitely been my experience and everybody I've talked to, their experience too.
Two guys outside of the industry is my high school shop teacher, Mr. Yauch. Definitely found something in me that he liked and took me under his wing. And he actually had me do an internship at a machine shop, which I didn't even know he recommended me for that. My counselor just said, hey, are you interested in working at this machine shop? And I said, yeah, that'd be my high school shop teacher was one of my mentors, Mr. Yauch, metal shop teacher. And, he had saw something in me he liked and he took me under his wing. And, I pretty much ended up being his assistant in there, and spent a lot of time there as much as I could. And then, unbeknownst to me, he, recommended to my guidance counselor to, do an internship at a machine shop.
Oh, cool.
And ended up doing that. And then I actually asked my counselor later who recommended me or how this came about. And he goes, well, you know, Mr. Yauch recommended you. And it just floored me because He was a great guy, but he didn't talk about stuff like that. It was just the nuts and bolts of stuff. Great sense of humor, but most people didn't get his jokes because his jokes were more intellectual, and 90% of the people in there didn't get them except 10% of the people. So
Right. So in that shop class, y'all had lathes, milling machines, all those things in high school?
Yep.
Lathes, oh, that's so cool.
We did arc welding, MIG, TIG. We had everything. That's back when you could get scrap metal easily, and they donate it to the schools, and we could weld as much as we wanted. And I know, you know, probably 15 years later, everything kind of changed where it was hard to get those materials and get them donated. And then a lot of places eliminated metal shop, wood shop, automotive shop. A lot of the high schools nowadays don't even have it. That's where I learned a lot was in high school.
That's
all that
awesome.
Stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really, really cool.
It's almost like going to a career center now. You'd have to go to a career center to get the same experience that I got right in high school. So,
yeah.
And then my best friend, him and I met when we were 5 years old. We met because I had a mini bike and he had a mini bike. And we raced together for 45 years.
Wow. That's so cool. That is awesome.
And the funny part about that is that him and I modified everything we had. I don't care if it was a mini bike. It was our first dirt bike, our first moped. We would rip them apart and figure out the way to make them better and faster.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
And I mean, that started, you know, at 5 years old. I mean, that was,
That's
it's
awesome.
Hard to believe that we've been doing it that long. You know, I stopped racing 5 years ago and, you know, him and I talk on a daily basis, but he's downstate, you know, he's 3 hours away.
Gotcha.
But we still talk all the time. I absolutely miss riding and racing next to the guy because, you know, we were same age, so we rode a lot of the same classes. But I could, you know, 5 years ago, ride next to him, I mean, completely wide open and be very comfortable with what I do, and I knew what he would do. You know, and we would still bang bars and do that stuff, but I never doubted anything he did. And same with me, never doubted anything I did. So I don't think a lot of people get to experience that kind of thing, but it was a big part of my life for a lot of years. So
no, that's definitely, I think, a very unique experience, and especially to do it for that long with the same person. That's incredible. Because normally, as we get older, we grow apart or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I think out of 10 guys, there's still 5 guys that ride one race, 2 race still, and the other guys kind of ride once a year type thing. But when I gave it up, I just couldn't do that. It was all or nothing for me, so I just walked away.
Yeah,
and
no,
you know, when I was down in Florida, in Orlando this year, the phone call was, "Hey, what are you doing today?" "Well, you know, I just got to register him here on Sunday." And he goes, "Well, we got a bike and gear sitting there waiting for you at the track." I'm like, "No."
Yeah.
Yeah, they still call me all the time, want me to come. And, you know, I can't do, I'm too big for that anymore. But
awesome.
They still try to egg me into it. So.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's cool, though. Sounds like some good friendships there. What would be your dream job or opportunity?
You know, when I was younger, I wanted to be a wildlife photographer.
Okay, yeah.
And we're talking before the internet, before cell phones, where you actually had to, you couldn't fly a drone. There was no drone. So you actually had to go out and do it. Mm-hmm. Actually, with a camera, go to Alaska and shoot the wildlife there. I always wanted to do that. Never did end up doing it or even pursuing it. But it was just a dream that, you know, man, I wished I would have done that. I wished I would have pursued that when I was younger. Not that I didn't like the way everything worked out, but it was definitely a little dream I had. And I always thought about maybe being a chef. I thought that would be pretty cool too.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know, but I think that's a little harder than most people think. You know.
So, yeah, I would think so too. I mean, just seeing what little I've seen in the kitchen at the golf course, you know, which is low key compared to a lot of, you know, a big restaurant or something like that, and all the stuff they have to go through that you never think they would have to deal with. It would be tough.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I can say that the job I have now is, you know, wasn't my dream, but it is my dream now. I definitely have a lot of passion for it, for sure.
That's so awesome. That's so good.
Even more than I can say I enjoy myself more than I did owning a marine dealership.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. And I'm sure not quite as not as much stress there, hopefully.
Yeah, that's one of the big things is I had the stress. I don't have to worry about the books and all that and everything else that goes with it.
However many employees and
Yeah. So I do miss the customers though. Building relationships over the years. I do miss all the customers for sure, but I don't miss any of the hassle and bookkeeping and dealing with the state and all that stuff. So
yeah, right. What technician would you like to work with for a day?
I think it's Fred Hartenstein.
Okay. Did you get to meet him?
No, I haven't met him. I thought that would be just the greatest experience to go spend a day with him at the pinnacle job, supposedly, in our industry.
Yeah.
I would love to go there for a day and spend a day with him. And he's actually a native of Motown.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did not.
I want to say the early 80s, he worked for Warren Midtown Motors, I believe, as a tech there.
Hmm. Okay.
And then he went to Blueberry Hills Golf Course for 3 years. And then he ended up at Augusta. He's been there 35 years. So
yeah, I knew he had a long tenure there, and he loves, or he did, Mustangs. He
really?
Was really, really into Mustangs, and he would go to the track days and all those things. I hadn't talked to him probably in 10 years, I guess. I'll run into him occasionally at the conference and trade show and say, hey, but that's about it. But super good guy.
Yeah, like I said, I would definitely like to go there for the day and
spend
a day over there and see how they do things. And I enjoy going to even the local, you know, a lot of the local golf courses around here and meeting the superintendent and equipment managers, you know, like you have here, you know, or the past 20 years. I really enjoy going around and meeting new people and seeing how they do things and seeing if any of that stuff they do can apply it, you know, bettering our golf course.
Yeah. And that's what it is. And that's why I love doing it so much. And not that you're going to learn something from every place you go to, but I mean, if you go in with an open mind, even some of these lower end courses that are, you know, where the superintendent is the mechanic, you can still learn stuff from those people because a lot of times the people with less resources are a lot more innovative than the ones with more resources.
It always seems like no matter where I go, you always seem to pick up one tip that you can apply directly at your shop the next day. It always seems like there's just one little thing. It's like, well, I wished I would have thought of that. And, you know, and that's the whole deal about networking for me is, you know, getting out there and getting that knowledge and talking to new people and making new friendships. So.
No, it's so, so important. Yeah. And I've made so many, I mean, true friends that, you know, I talk to a lot just in the last 3 or 4 years, you know, and from different reasons, from traveling around, from speaking at certain places or like volunteering with GCSA on the task group, volunteering at East Lake for the tour championship. I mean, it's just amazing all these people you run into that you can become pretty close with. And you got a friend to lean on in the industry when times get hard or, you know, you're struggling with whatever the problem is. You pick the phone up. Or I called Jerry Kerr today asking about a top dresser because we're looking for a new top dresser. And I was pretty sure what brand he ran. So, and I've not ran that brand, so I just wanted a little more information on it, you know, why he liked it better than the competition. And it's really handy to have somebody basically on speed dial to pick the phone up and ask them those questions.
Yeah, we're looking for a new bed knife machine and experience the same thing. I started talking to guys that have, you know, Foley's and, you know, the two other brands out there, and it just, I got so much information from everybody to, you know, now I'm kind of, I kind of had my mind made up at first, but I sure did do a about face on that. That's for mm-hmm. sure. Yeah. There's some pluses and minuses on some of the machines, and you know, a couple of them, I'm like, wow, that is unbelievable. What, you know, what they can do and how precise they are. So.
Yeah. 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 Not yeah, very true.
I think ours is 20 years old, so it's been fixed up a little bit, but I still struggle with it. It just doesn't cut as flat as I would like it to sometimes. So
gotcha.
No matter how much I work on it and try to fix it and change mm-hmm. stuff, it's just at the end of its life. So
right, yeah, yeah. And there is a service life on all this stuff, and you replace all the bushings and bearings and the pins, and it still ain't new. You know, you can get it close and get it a lot better, but still not new. What do you know now you wish you'd known on day one?
I wished I would have known that a sprayer pump crank can break.
That's a good one.
On my second day, the sprayer went down. I mean, on my second day of work, you mm-hmm. know,
right.
Sprayer went down. Got John from Spartan on the phone. We ran through I ran through everything in schematics at first, and I couldn't find it. I called my support, and we went through everything that I just went through. And we kind of figured it was a hydraulic actuator problem. Mm-hmm. So, and it was like $3,200. And I said, well, if this isn't the problem, you're going to take this back. He goes, if it isn't the problem, I'll come take it back and come pick your unit up and fix it. So, said, okay. So put it on a couple days later, and that was not the problem. So sent it. They came and picked it up the next day, and I didn't hear nothing for 4 days, and they couldn't figure it out. Hmm. And I think they actually got a couple guys on the phone trying to figure it out, and then they finally figured out that it was the pump crank that broke, and they said it was the first one they've ever seen break.
Which pump was this?
The main hydraulic pump on a 5600 Toro. So it was the main hydraulic pump that's mounted on the side and the back. External. I mean, it's a big pump.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I thought you were talking about the spray pump. I want to say I have seen those break before.
So it was the first one they seen, and that was my second day at work. So
yeah, yeah.
You did
yeah.
know, I didn't know anything about sprayers, but I could read a schematic and check all, you know, run through the electrical system, mm-hmm. Look at the schematic, go through the hydraulic system. That stuff's generally pretty easy for me to do. Mm-hmm. So it was something they fixed, and they got right back to us. And I think that's the only thing we've sent out to another source to fix of all our equipment we have had. So I've been able to fix everything, which, you know, that's like a pride thing to all of us that you never want to send anything out. You want to be the one that fixes it, you know?
Oh yeah. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. I can't remember sending anything out, but, and I mean, a lot of clubs have to, because if you're a one person technician crew and say you don't have time to split a tractor and put a clutch in it, I mean, I get that. So a lot of clubs do send that stuff out, and there's nothing wrong with that, but I'm with you. I feel like that's what they pay me to do. So that's what I want to do.
Yeah, I definitely look at that in the same light for sure. I haven't experienced something like that in the middle of the season, and I'm not sure what I would do. I would try to fix it myself, but I do know that since I'm like everyone else, just a one guy show, mm-hmm. sometimes you got to do what you got to do, you know?
Well, that's the thing. You got two fairway mowers that need to be ground, and you need to put a clutch in the tractor. So it's impossible to do all that, you know, in a week's time.
Yeah. But I don't think the membership cares that the clutch has gone in the tractor, but they would care if the fairway mower was down 3 days. So,
oh yeah, exactly. You
definitely set your priorities mm-hmm. and stick to your priorities. You know, the one thing I did do my first year was just the 24/7 panic, fix everything. Until I got my hands on it the following winter, I want to say last year, I can actually say this now, we had zero breakdowns on the golf course. I mean, zero. There wasn't That's one awesome. Piece of equipment that needed to be towed off. Nothing broke other than, you know, stupid little stuff like sprinkler head stuck in the reel or, you know, stuff like that. But we didn't tow anything off the course. I didn't have to go out and fix anything out on the course other than, you know, making adjustments or something simple like that. So
yeah,
I can't say that in the first year.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, the other thing I wished I would have known is that to replace the hydraulic lines, especially on the ones that lift the decks, you know, in Michigan, you're supposed to do it every 3 to 4 years. And some of the equipment's 15, 20 years old when I got there. And of course, in the first week we had a hydraulic pop, you know, one of the fairway mows. And, I wished I would have known that none of them had been replaced and they were all original equipment. I would have replaced them immediately, but that took one more time for that to happen before I made the phone call and say, what is going on? And he goes, well, how old are they? I said, well, they're original. He's like, well, that's the problem. So, so I spent a couple of days changing all the hydraulic lines and all the mowers that had the, you know, external lift arms that, you know, the hydraulic lines actually folded in when the, you know, piece of equipment got lifted up. So.
Right. No, that's something, you know, I think all manufacturers recommend every 3 years. Well, I can't speak for Jake because I hadn't looked at their stuff in a long time or hadn't owned any of it to know, but John Deere and Toro for sure.
Yeah. But most hydraulic lines and everything else seem to last a long time. You know, you get 20 years. It's just the ones with the move a lot up and down and get moved around and bowed one way, bowed the other way. It seems like those are the ones that, you know, are the big problem. So,
well, yeah. And don't get me wrong. That's what I was trying to say is, yeah, those are the ones they recommend replacing, not every single hose on the mower. If you do have 4-wheel drive or 3-wheel drive units, I replace those every 3 years also. Because they're doing so much turning back and forth with the hoses.
Yeah, definitely from day one there, I had the resources and the backing from Steve Hammond, our superintendent, to, you know, I told him, I said, I can do all this stuff. I said, the only thing I need to be trained on is the reel technology. Mm-hmm. And I'm starting to pick that up this year pretty good, you know, from going to MTF and going to a national event in Orlando. Man, I picked up some great, not just tips. I picked up some in-depth stuff that I was looking for, you know, to take my real grinding program to the next level. And I've implemented that since I've been back. I haven't been able to mow with them because we're still buried in snow, but I'm so looking forward to, you know, after documenting everything to see what kind of life I'm going to get out of some of the changes I've made. If it's going to stay in adjustment longer, am I going to do less grinding? Easier to maintain the edge. Yeah, really looking forward to that stuff this year. So
yeah, that's super, super exciting. And it's great how much stuff you can learn at conference and show and MTF too. That was really good and a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. And thank you again, you and Ben, for having me up there because that was a blast.
Oh, we had a great time. It was you know, the first time I met you, and wow, you did a great job when you actually went in the big room and talked to the superintendents and everything about real life.
That was
outstanding. That was so good.
Thank you. Appreciate that. You have any tips or tricks you want to share with us?
You know, I implemented a grease program and that sounds petty, but I know that I got a battery powered grease gun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just got rid of the hand pump or the one that you hooked up to the airline, pneumatic one.
Yep.
And what I really liked about it is that I could actually adjust it to how much grease comes out.
Milwaukee?
Yes, it is. Yeah. It's the Milwaukee. So I was having a big problem keeping up with the rough mower back rollers. They were just chewing them up, and I was greasing them all the time. It could have been there were some old parts that wore out that got replaced. But as soon as I implemented and trained our guys, I got a grease gun for the guys, and they basically wash the equipment off. Then they go fill it. And in that check, I put the grease gun. It's already set up, and it just puts a little, you know, they hit the trigger one time. And it puts a little bit of grease out enough that it keeps the positive pressure on the seal especially when you're always washing it and you kind of pushing that seal in a little bit and dirt and stuff like that starts pushing in, keep that positive seal on there and it keeps all the water and dirt out, which at the end of the season, when I took the stuff apart and looked at it, I think I showed some pictures at the MTF that it was perfectly greased in there. The grease was still, it wasn't black. It was actually the green color grease. There was no pitting and there was just no penetration of water or grease whatsoever. And I'm like, this is exactly what I'm looking for. And it saved us close to 10 grand in our first year.
Just by
putting a simple grease gun and training people. Hey, you just hit this. You hit the trigger, put it on here, hit the trigger one time. I don't want you to grease anything else. Just, you got 6 Zerks fitting. So when you're filling it up, you stop and grease this. And it's a simple maintenance thing that we have enough to do sometime. And just those little simple stuff like that make such a big difference. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And like you're saying, when you're running around, you know, like crazy trying to get all this stuff done, you're not thinking about going over there and putting 2 pumps of grease in a rear roller.
Right. On a daily basis.
Right. On a daily basis, for sure.
So, but I made it so we can't over grease it because that's just as bad as the other problem, you know, pushing the seal out the other way. So I was able to come up with just a couple little settings and made it simple, trained all the guys, showed them how to do it, show them how to do it. I would know if they did it because they're not smart enough to wipe the tip off. So I would know I would know if they did it or not. And I wouldn't harp on them about it. If they missed a day or two, hopefully no one's listening to this. They miss it a day or two, no big deal.
But
those guys that did it daily, it seems like they started taking a little bit of pride in their equipment too, because they started noticing, hey, that bolt looks loose. Hey, this looks bent. You know, they started bringing me stuff that they would never see before because they're actually hands-on.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
You know, there's a couple parts on those decks, on the total decks, that wear items and bolts that break a lot on the deck. And they're right down by the grease fitting. So, and that's something I'm always checking when I bring it in. But I noticed those guys started checking that stuff. You know, if they thought it was loose, I saw a guy grab a 14 mil wrench and tighten it a little bit. And then he came back and said, hey, this thing was loose. Can you double check this? I'd go over there. Yeah, great job. You know?
That's
so
awesome.
Just wasn't a grease program. It seemed to go a little further than that. And any feedback that we get from our team members helps tremendously in my job.
So, well, and like you're saying, them taking ownership and the equipment, that's huge. That's what we're striving for, honestly.
Yeah, definitely. We have some great, great operators. We have one guy, and he is so humble. He can run any piece of equipment, fairway, greens mower, tee mower, doesn't matter. He can come from any angle at any speed, drop the reels perfectly, and cut this dead straight line. I don't care if it's 20 yards or a mile long. Mm-hmm. I've never seen anyone that can cut a straighter line than him.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's hard to find.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And he's one of those guys that can say, hey, something doesn't sound right, or something doesn't feel right, or instantly if something doesn't look right. But he's one of those guys that can, man, something just don't sound right. You know, I'll come out and do my check, and he'll wave me over and, hey, man, you know, something don't sound right. Here, listen to this, you know.
Right.
So, like I said, we have some great team members that do that. And, you know, I appreciate all the feedback I get from them. And then you have the guys that are pretty quiet and don't say much. They could be dragging a reel behind them and they won't stop, you know. But that's just part of the game. You know what I mean? So,
Yeah, for sure.
Everyone can't be that guy that knows everything and feels everything and sees everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those guys and gals are few and far between, for sure.
Yeah.
Especially at golf courses.
And that's why Steve's training program for new hires, and even when they come back in the spring, the program he has set up for training is just, you know, I've never seen anything like it from any industry.
Can we touch on that? I'd love to hear this training program.
Yeah. So basically there's a couple videos, which is kind of the funny thing, because everyone comes and gets to watch a couple videos, you know, but it goes right into the safety from where all the fire extinguishers are, where the shutoffs are for the gas tanks. I mean, anything you could think of, where the nuts and bolts are, where the weed whackers are, everything has its place, and there's nothing left, not one rake, not one fire extinguisher that he doesn't talk about and he physically walks everyone through and shows them where everything's at and what the use is for. And then the training on the mowers, it's repetitive, but he does it in a way where it doesn't feel like he's saying the same thing over and over and over and over. He'll change it up a little. So, you know, hey, look for this, look for that. When you're doing the bunkers, you want to, you know, don't go so high. You know, he's really good about not just calling you out, just kind of explaining what the problem is and how to fix it. Hey, you know, I noticed a couple of the guys, you guys are going a little bit too high up on the bunker. If you, you know, just back off a little bit and then come up to the top and just hand rake that. Spin around a couple times, come out, and then, you know, do your tracks. He just explains everything so good and breaks it down so everyone can understand it, no matter how good of an operator you are, or how inexperienced of an operator you are. So,
no, that's awesome. I think it's so, so important.
Yeah, even the safety stuff. What to do if there's a hydraulic leak on the course. Wear your safety glasses when you're mowing. Wear sunglasses when you're mowing. Have some kind of eye protection when you're out mowing. You know how that can go. That a blade of grass can come back in the wind and stick you in the eye, and, you know, permit damage. But you know how it just can make your life miserable.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, you could be going to the eye doctor, depending on what kind of debris you get in your eye just from mowing.
You know, he'll take Steve or a couple of the team leaders will take you out, and they might stick with you half the day to kind of get the tricks on how to drive around this green, how to mow this green from this angle, how to get around this bunker. Hey, instead of doing a short spin, drive straight out that 20 yards, turn around, come back, and then catch your line. You know, I mean, those little details are what makes us a great golf course. Just all the little, you know, sharing all those little secrets and being able to approach people and in a way that they understand. You know what I mean? He's just great. Him and I communicate great, and he's a great communicator, which makes both our jobs easier. You know,
That's awesome. Really good.
What's funny is him and I are the same age, and I'm actually 2 weeks older than him.
Oh,
so every once in a while I kick back at like, you're not supposed to talk to your elder that way.
Right. That's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's good stuff.
So
do you want to do some rapid fire questions?
Sure. What you got?
What's your favorite movie?
Tombstone. Kurt
Russell. Oh, yes. I'm right there with you, man.
I think the boys, we used to have the, you know, videotape back in the videotape days. And I think we would put that in no matter where we're at the track or whatever. We'd have that thing on every Saturday going. I kid you not, we must have watched it over 100 times. Yeah. And we know it line for line.
Yeah, it's a classic for sure.
Yeah.
What would be your last meal?
Filet mignon and king crab.
Oh, sounds so good. I'm hungry too. What are you most proud of?
My family. My family is very, very, you know, is everything. You know,
yes.
My kids, my wife, grandkids.
All right. How many grandkids?
4.
Oh, okay. How many kids?
2.
All right. Awesome.
Yeah, there we got the kids. We got one that's a young teenager, and we got the one that's 6 now, and she's at that age where she's just a blast. She runs us ragged 24/7. Grandma ragged 24/7.
Yeah, it's amazing. I don't know where that energy comes from, and I don't know where it goes once you get older, but it's not there.
She came over the other day. It was Supercross week at Daytona Supercross, so we always have a party. She found out Thursday that she was coming over. So the first thing she did was pack 5 bags, made her ma drop them off before school on Friday, and there wasn't one stitch of clothes in those bags. They were all toys.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. I love it. So, that's good stuff.
Yeah.
Tell the listeners how they can get a hold of you. You got a Twitter account?
It's Mitch Hunt at TCCC.
Okay. Easy enough.
Yeah. It's pretty simple. Yep. I think you can just type my name in and find me. Pretty easy. Yep.
Okay. Very cool.
So.
Well, thank you so much, Mitch, for being on. This has been a pleasure.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me on. Said it was great meeting you, and I loved it. As soon as you sent me that, I'm like, wow, that's quite an honor. I'd love to do it. So,
thank you so much for coming on, and I tell all the guests and I tell all the listeners, we have a lot of fun just recording this interview. I do, and most of the guests do too, I think. And we get to know more about each other.
And yeah, I'll have to do an interview with you, dig in a little bit more with you. I haven't heard too many stories from you yet.
Well, for the listeners, it's something I thought about it and planned on doing it. I don't remember. I think it was my first year. So we just completed 2 years. I started the podcast in March of 21. So we got our full 2 years under our belt. And I want to say it was the first year I talked to somebody about interviewing me and asking me all the same questions. And I talked to another guy the other day. I think episode 100, we're going to, reverse the roles and interview the host.
Nice.
So, and hopefully y'all, I can't believe you still like hearing me or my stories, but long as people keep listening, I'm going to keep doing it.
Oh, you do a real great job. I've caught a bunch of yours. Yeah, I enjoy listening to them. I know Steve does too. I mentioned to Steve that I was doing this, and he was driving back from somewhere trying to find it. I'm like, it hasn't happened yet.
Oh, yeah.
So he'll be excited to hear this one for sure. So
awesome. Well, thanks again, Mitch.
Well, you take care. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you so much for listening to the Real Turf Techs podcast. I hope you learned something today. Don't forget to subscribe. If you have any topics you would like to discuss or you'd like to be a guest, find us on Twitter @RealTurfTechs. See you bye.